Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk powered in part this morning by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit TourStaffordVA.com. TourStaffordVA.com. It is the George Washington Foundation, Kenmore, and Ferry Farm, our focus this morning. Amy Durbin, Dave Maraca, and Megan Buttinger in this morning to talk about things going on. Hi, guys. Good to have you back.
Good morning. Hi.
Good morning.
We need to tie up a couple of loose ends from the last show.
Just go right
Megan
into it.
Megan gets a free pass. She wasn't here.
Yeah, I wasn't Megan, here, so.
So we have to tie up this one major issue. Because there is, if you go to the Lives and Legacies blog that you all do, and that is just fascinating, just a great, it is my favorite blog. Until the last one, oyster ice cream. And we talked about oyster ice cream, but now there are pictures. And it's even more disgusting than I thought. Has anybody here tried it?
Megan was out of town. I was out of town. I think Dave just said no.
No, I tried.
Did you try it?
I tried. Okay. Yes, and I'm happy to report on it.
Okay, so you're here. Yes. We know that you survived. Yes.
So give us the scoop.
Give us literally.
So I watched the process and was surprised by it because I was expecting chunks of oyster to be in the ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, just like a modern ice cream with all the stuff on top. And I was sort of in the worst sort of iteration of it. There would be chunks of oyster sticking out of the top, and it would be, you know, it's like, okay, so it wasn't that. So they strained the oysters, the juice, and just mixed it in with the rest of the stuff. And so, and then it was... So let me describe it as its texture was gooey and a little gritty. And so
I don't want that in ice cream.
Dave Maraca.
Fruit critic, yeah.
And then the taste was surprisingly mild. It wasn't as oystery as I thought it was, but it wasn't creamy either. And so I took
it. So it was nothing as advertised.
I took a very small bite, and then it was like, okay, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And then here's the crazy part. Like 2 minutes later, I thought, I could have some more.
Oh my God.
I was like, and I think I was the only, so they did a taste test with anyone around that would sort of, you know, go ahead and do it. And some people just said, no, thank you. Right. We're just out.
Yeah.
And some people put it in their mouth and, you know, quickly took it out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And then I think, so mine was the most positive review.
Okay.
Which was like,
that was the positive
this is
review.
Not as bad as I thought it was going to be, which was the dominant one. But then it was like, and I didn't express this. I thought, well, I could eat some more of that. But I did not say that out loud.
Right, pure pressure. Yeah,
I wonder how long it keeps. There's still some in the freezer.
There is still some in the freezer. We should have brought Ted some. We should have brought Ted some oyster ice cream that's been in the freezer for 2.5 weeks.
Because what could be worse than oyster ice cream other than spoiled?
Spoiled oyster ice cream.
It looked like oatmeal when I looked at the picture, but I knew it was ice cream and it was cold.
Yeah, frozen. Actually frozen. Yeah.
So there you go.
I think what we all learned from the oyster ice cream experiment that basically oyster ice cream is a really horrible way of ruining a perfectly good seafood stew. Because that's what you start out with. You start out with a seafood stew, a lot of oysters, and then you take all the stuff you like out of it and you freeze it. So that's what oyster ice cream ends up being. And not a delicacy any of us really want to continue with.
I'm trying to remember when Mara was here and we talked about it. Did this go back? The reason you did it, I mean, this goes back to that time period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So. Virginia Housewife?
Yes. It appears in a couple different cookbooks from the time period. And of course, there's this great mythology that's built up around ice cream and the history of ice cream that has to do with Dolly Madison and apparently some mythology that George Washington loved oyster ice cream. In the process of all of this, we found that none of those things were true. There's actually no historical indication that Dolly Madison preferred oyster ice cream or ever even served it, or that George Washington ever favored it for any reason. And in fact, the recipe for the oyster ice cream only appeared in the Virginia Housewife for one edition, and then it was gone in the next edition.
That's so funny, because I was going to say, well, I understood that Dolly Madison loved oyster ice cream.
I actually thought that was true, too, and I think it's a mythology that has grown up around it, but that is absolutely untrue.
I will never say that.
Yeah, again. I will never say it again either.
The first time I said
yeah.
it. What if they just made oyster stew and it got really cold one night and it froze and they tried it, and then that's how this all came about?
I mean, maybe...
I'm just curious now, since...
It's entirely possible. I don't know what other impetus there could have been to do such a thing, but it apparently was not hugely popular because the recipe really only made it through one edition of the cookbook and then it disappeared.
Okay. But so. it was semi-popular with Dave.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so I mean, for the historical record, semi-popular with Dave Maraca.
Right. And there's a lot of pictures and write-up in the Lives and Legacies blog.
It's a fun blog.
It is a very fun blog. There's more to it than oyster ice cream. I will put that blog though up on our Facebook page in the next day or so too, so people can see that. There's many other things going on besides oyster ice cream that we need to jump into and that you all came in for this morning. The George Washington Foundation, Kenmore and Ferry Farm, our focus, and we will take a quick break and get back and talk to some real big events coming up, and we'll do that when we return on News Talk 1230 WFE.org.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is the George Washington Foundation this morning. Historic Kenmore and Ferry Farm, our focus. Megan Bottinger, Dave Maraca, and Amy Durbin here from the George Washington Foundation. Amy, we have a big, big, big event coming up, and this is one that you've been talking about since you first started talking about all these events going on at Kenmore this year. The USO Night at Kenmore is coming up on November 11th, and this is going to be a big deal, and I have one of the first buttons that people will get. It is so cool.
You sure do, Ted.
It is so cool. And this is going to be a really fun thing. And there's a lot of history behind this.
Absolutely. And Megan can speak to the history of that as well. So as you know, it's our centennial year. We're trying to highlight Kenmore as it grew up in Fredericksburg. So not just when it was built by Fielding and Betty, but you know, who's used it since then. And it was used for USO events. And so we thought, well, why don't we have a really great, you know, kind of fall centennial program? And the beauty is that Veterans Day falls on a Friday this year, so it's not going to conflict with any football, which is a big thing. And so it worked out perfectly that we wanted to have a USO night at Historic Kenmore. And so it's going to be Fredericksburg Big Band is going to be there playing music. We're going to have reenactors. We're going to have some classic cars. There's going to be food and drink. There's going to be a photo booth. Megan's helping us repurpose some exhibit panels that had spoken about USO in the past. And so, again, I'll let you speak to that. But it's going to be a really fun night. And as you just mentioned, it's the final button in the Centennial Button Series. So if you have been following along all year and you've been collecting your buttons, this is your chance to get your fourth and final button. And it features the other side of Kenmore, and it also features Betty Washington Lewis on it. And so you're probably not going to find a button featuring her on that anywhere else. So these are limited edition buttons. And
is it a microphone that's in front of her?
It is a microphone, Ted. She's saying V for victory.
Oh, okay. She's saying that. I saw that. I just saw the V, but I see that it's a yes.
Yeah.
It's like a cartoon.
I've kind of dolled her up into a 1940s-esque USO lady there, and it's gonna be a really fun night.
Oh, it's a very cool button because you've got USO up on the roof. you've got little the triangular flags across the front, and it's a very festive button to go with the others.
It's the second favorite one I designed this year.
Second favorite, yeah.
To me the best one was George Washington on 4th of July.
That's
in
my favorite.
Sunglasses.
Yes. That was the best one I did, but this one I don't think is too bad either.
No, this is very good. They all are good though. They all have their own place. So this is something you want to get tickets for in advance and all of that.
Yes. So tickets are $35. That does include food and soft drinks. You can purchase tickets for alcohol on site. And then if you're a veteran or active military, tickets are $25 a person. And the event is about 2.5 hours long. And there's, like I said, there's going to be photo booth, reenactors, dancing, food, all kinds of fun. And it should be a really great night. So we're praying for good weather.
Yeah, well, you've had good weather all along. It's going to happen.
It's going to
happen. This is going to be fun just because the fire. This is kind of, to me, like the fireworks at Ferry Farm. It was just something so totally different, and you had music there, and it was different. This is just like opening up Kenmore and making Kenmore fun again.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
that's exactly what we were going for, Ted.
Yes. No, I just think that the whole thing, because I was going to talk about this a little bit later, that I have not been through programs at Kenmore at night. Mm-hmm. And no. I've heard that that it gives you a whole different perspective of things. This would really give you a different perspective.
Yeah, I would think that this would give you a very different perspective. It's a time period that most people don't associate with Kenmore, the 1940s, the war years, and yet here locally, Kenmore played such a huge role in the local war effort in the home front. And the entire premise of this event is something that happened regularly throughout the war on the front lawn at Kenmore. They had these dances and these USO programs for soldiers transitioning through the area on their way to the front. And, it's going to be a really good time, a way to see Kenmore like you've never seen it before. And with live music, live swing band. It'll be great.
And gingerbread. I forgot to mention. So
there's always gingerbread.
Everybody who's commenting all the time about how they used to visit and get gingerbread.
Yeah.
You'll get gingerbread at this event. So we will actually have it being served as part of the dessert option. And so you can, again, visit Kenmore and get your gingerbread and be great.
Absolutely.
If you saw the video that we did over the summer, you would understand.
You
Megan
would,
and I
you know,
did,
all
a,
about
did a video, and we talked about gingerbread, and there is a great story about gingerbread
That's
in Kenmore.
That's right. Go look up that video. It was a great explanation of the connection between Kenmore's very early years and its founding and gingerbread, and why so many people locally here associate going to Kenmore to get gingerbread in our old tea room. It basically was a massive fundraiser for the original Kenmore Association. And throughout the war years, when they were entertaining the troops on the lawn or for dinner, they served them fresh, warm gingerbread and tea straight from the kitchen. And that became sort of a symbol of the war effort, the home front, and sort of comfort and entertainment for the troops. And it became sort of synonymous with Kenmore in that time period. So it's a big part of the Centennial exhibit that we have in the Crown and Shield Gallery right now, and it'll be a big part of this event, and it's a great video that you did that sort of explained that whole thing, so check it out.
Yeah, I'd always heard about gingerbread and hadn't really heard the whole
why.
Story.
Yeah.
I will say, Amy, you have really succeeded in one. I have learned a lot with this 100th anniversary. With the things that you've done, and it has been some of the programs at both Ferry Farm, but especially at Kenmore. To me, Kenmore was just this very you walked in, and any time you were around Kenmore, you sort of had hushed tones, and you sort of had a library voice when you dealt with Kenmore. And you really have done a great job of explaining the different kind of the layers of Kenmore, that it's not just the Revolutionary War Kenmore, that it has played an important part in the community.
Yeah, I think the foundation's team has really come together with all these really great ideas. Megan and Heather in collections have been great with like giving us content to work with. Archaeology's been on hand to talk about different elements that have been found at Kenmore over the years. Education has pulled programs together with an entirely new staff this year, so it's a foundation-wide order of that we had, you know, like, let's get Kenmore to be fun again. You know, we love Fairy Farm. Fairy Farm's great.
Yeah.
Fairy Farm's not going anywhere. But Kenmore's kind of, you know, fallen off the map a bit when people visit. And I'm really proud of everything that we've all done this year. And so I'm thank you for saying that.
No, it is. I did not understand. I mean, I understood where Kenmore stood in the Revolutionary War part. But there really are so many more components. And especially the exhibit on the women in Saving Kenmore. That's just fabulous, because you're looking at stuff there that they were doing that are things that are being done today. They were doing it without the technology we have.
Well, and like, that's the cool thing about Kenmore. Like, Fredericksburg grew up around Kenmore, if you look at it that way. And then Megan's great exhibit this year is talking about the preservation movement that people are really into today, but it's already happening 100 years ago, as you say, you know, without social media or without online funding. I mean, these ladies are crossing the country literally on like a road trip to like tout why Kenmore needs saving. And you don't think about that these days when you think about, you know, what we're going to save or what matters. And you get a group of people together who have an idea, and they, you know, they kind of show you what you can do if you have an idea to save something. And so it's just a really great exhibit.
The other sort of the tie-in to that, too, is just the fact that the women save Kenmore, and you sit around and you say, you know, what would the city be like without it?
Yeah.
At the same time, you look at however many years then later, the same organization saves Fairy Farm, and we all say, where would we be without that? So it really is kind of the two together. You've done a great job of telling the story, but the women especially, because I didn't know any of that.
Never
heard any of that. Maybe just that some other than what just it said, some women save Kenmore.
Right.
But you really did.
Yes.
We're
pretty good about pointing that out. But yes, getting into the details of the story this year has really been interesting and fun, and seeing sort of the public realization about what went into, I mean, having Kenmore as a museum in our backyards wasn't a foregone conclusion, and very nearly didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Fairy Farm. And I think most of the general public is a little more familiar with Fairy Farm story because it was very recent. It was just in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing happened, you know, a century ago with Kenmore, and we very, very nearly lost it. And that's sort of true of the historic preservation movement in the entire country, is that these things just don't survive on their own. It takes people doing something to save them.
I think it's so interesting that when I really first met you, when you were starting your blog and when you were really doing a lot of research on Kenmore, there's so little was left to tell the story about Kenmore. You just have just tried to piece things together or figure out the color of the walls and what that might have meant. As far as saving, they really saved a lot of stuff.
They did, and that's sort of the irony, is for the years and years and years we've been trying to piece together these tiny little clues and details about the, you know, sort of the Revolutionary era history of the house, and then we get to the centennial year, and it's like, yeah, there's a wealth of information out there. There are diaries, there are photo albums, there are, you know, they saved every artifact from every event they had, every fundraiser they did. I mean, there's a reason we know that gingerbread story, because we have the entire ledger where they kept track of how much money they were making with the gingerbread. So this has been a fun year. There's been a wealth of information, really great resources, really fun stuff for us all to look at and to pull out of storage and finally give its day in the sun.
The moment for me when we were going through the exhibit over at Kenmore was the name of the little projector thing.
Oh, yeah. The magic lantern.
Yeah, the magic lantern. The fact that you had that and had all of that, I just thought, this is just fascinating stuff.
Yeah, that little magic lantern projector that they used glass slide plates for. So combined, they had to carry that thing, which easily weighs 40 pounds, and a box of the glass slides.
Yeah.
It was easily another 20, 25 pounds. And that's what they packed up in the back of the Packard and drove across the country to do a slide presentation everywhere they stopped about historic Kenmore. And yeah, I think when people walk into the exhibit and they see that sitting there and they read about it, they realize this is the kind of effort that had to go into saving Kenmore, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they were really, they were determined to
do
it.
They were determined, absolutely.
And so, I mean, I guess going forward, Amy, this gives you in the education world just all kinds of different things to build off of now. I can't imagine that you're just going to go back to, well, there's Ken Moore, and we'll go back to our library voices.
Well, no. So we've been talking to Megan and Heather about some things because we always like to joke that at Fairy Farm we want you to touch the stuff, but then you go to Kenmore and you can't touch the stuff. And so how do we kind of find a middle line about that? But also, thanks to Megan's exhibit, we were able to create some, like, fun interactive cards and, like, activity books. So you can also learn about architectural history by visiting Kenmore. And you can learn about primary sources. And so it, like, opens up a whole new opportunity to engage, you know, everyday visitors and the K-12 audience. So, no, we're not going back to things how they were. We're moving forward. We're progressing into being more accessible. So we're excited about that.
Well, one of the best programs, one of the best outside programs I have ever been to, and I unfortunately was there late and had to leave early, and so I don't have as much video of it that I would like, is our friend Dave Maraca, who's sitting here at the end of the table quietly right now. But he did one on just on the gardens, and that was to me just one of the I had known about Kenmore, but again, this is and you did that a couple of years ago and opened my eyes of the history of Kenmore.
And what's great about that tour was just the landscape at Kenmore is that would work all throughout the town. You could go to any part of Fredericksburg and sort of look at the landscape, the modern landscape, and see traces of the earlier landscape throughout the town. And it's just a great way to look at historic cities. And so we should do something.
We should do that again.
If only we had someone who could do a program.
Yeah.
Go through town and sort of just pull out the 18th century bits that are still surviving on the modern landscape.
Again, it's a USO night at Kenmore. It's November 11th. And go to kenmore.org for ticket information.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way.
Yep.
Again, now USO night at Kenmore. Don't want to miss it. November 11th. It will be you'll see again Kenmore in a different way, and you'll have a lot of fun. Amy Durbin, Dave Maraca, Megan Budinger here from the George Washington Foundation. Kenmore and Fairy Farm, our focus. Much more coming up. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. It's 8:30 on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
George Washington Foundation, Kenmore and Fairy Farm, our focus this morning with Dave Maraca, Megan Budinger, and Amy Durbin here this morning. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. Couple more of events to cover, Amy. Again, the USO night at Kenmore is November the 11th. Kenmore.org for ticket information. And get your tickets early just because. Just because.
Yes, please.
Just because.
It does help us when people do that.
Right. One other thing, or a couple of things, but it's called, and I can't. Every time you come in, I can't read my writing. I know it's November 5th at 7 o'clock, and it's something about Washington's Day.
Yes, actually, it's night in Washington's Day.
Oh, night. Okay, I'll have to show you how I wrote night, and you'll understand.
So yeah, we'll have to talk about your penmanship.
Yes, this happens all the time.
And maybe we'll compare it with GW's because sometimes I can't read his, and I could have sworn he did some math wrong. Anyhow, it's an annual event that we have. The first Saturday in November, and Megan can also speak to this too. I found it to be exciting last year, and you get to learn, well, I guess a couple things. You get to visit Kenmore at night. I want to make clear, though, it is not a nighttime tour of Kenmore, so you're not getting a full tour. There was some confusion. But you get to learn about the role the stars played in the 18th century. You get to learn how lighting has evolved since the 18th century, and you get a little bit more insight into the thoughts and feelings of those who were enslaved in the 18th century. And so it's a really great program. It's about an hour. This year we are adding a tea tasting and some cookies at the end of it so people can can chat about their experiences or just get a warm drink afterwards. And I can turn this over to Megan if she'd like to add more information.
But she's doing that because this is one of my favorite programs, because it is a nighttime at Kenmore program, which I'm a huge fan of. Everybody loves to come to Kenmore after dark, and it is correct, it's not a full tour of the house. You won't see the entire house, but you there is one of the stations for the program is in the house and will be candlelit. And it's meant to give you a really good experience of exactly how dark it was indoors at nighttime in the 18th century without any kind of mechanical light sources. So we actually at one point turned the lights out on you, and you're plunged into the realities of 18th century life and after dark. And it's amazing what they were able to do without any sort of electric lights or anything like that, and had very active nightlife at the time. I mean, they were very productive people even after the sun went down. And so it's a great program that sort of shows you all the ins and outs of that, with stargazing and some refreshments and the craft, and it's a really fun family program.
I've never been to it, but people I know who've done Fifth Night have taught, isn't that what it's called?
Twelfth Night.
Yeah. 12th.
Sometimes it's on the 5th of January.
Sometimes it is on the 5th of January. That's true.
Okay, I knew it was something. I knew it was something. Don't count on me to be exact on some of my things. People have been there for 12th night have said that as it gets darker in January, that's really a fascinating time to be there.
Yeah. When we do 12th night, we always do some shows of the theatrical production when the sun is still up, for those who don't enjoy the dark, and then we do some that are after the sun went down. Those are always the more popular ones, because you really do see the house in literally a very different light, and it's very impressive.
So Amy mentioned about the role of stars.
Yeah.
That sounds like a whole program in itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the night sky, it has a lot of historical ties. You know, almost every culture on the face of the planet has had stories and mythology tied to the stars. And you know, the colonial Americans were no different, and they spent a lot of time gazing at the stars, at telling stories related to the stars and to mythology and that sort of thing. And in their period, because it was so dark, they could see a lot more than we can now. And so starlight actually was enough light for them to be able to function outside and to be able to see what they were doing. And that's really a concept that we'd have no understanding of in our modern world. I mean, the stars do not produce enough light for us to do anything by these days. But that's a really interesting aspect of how they were able to be so productive and live their lives without any kind of electrical light.
Because they had to deal with candles. Were there more fires back then?
Yes. I shouldn't laugh. That actually was a very serious problem. And actually, part of the demonstration that we do in the house about lighting techniques in the 18th century, we also talk about how they prepared for the possibility of fire, because that actually was a problem. It was a serious problem.
Well, and you've come across that, Dave, at the Ferry Farm site.
Yeah. So archaeologists uncover fires all the time. And so we have the fire in the house, and we also have a fire in the kitchen at Ferry Farm. And then in the 1990s, of course, the farmhouse there burned down. So we have to dig through that fire. That's not a very fun fire to go through. But the other fires are great. It's like a mini Pompeii. Everything is stuck in place when there's a catastrophic fire. And then Mara talks about the melting point, how hot the fire got in the kitchen, because the things that melt easy are gone. They're just all completely gone. And then everything is sort of burnt up.
So again, this is Night in Washington's Day, and it's November 5th at 7 o'clock.
Yes, and you can get tickets at Kenmore.org.
And again, that sounds like the whole stars thing Mark that on your calendar. Yes. We need to talk more about that, because that does sound very interesting. And in so many ways, I think we look back at that time and don't realize how they adapted to things that we just don't even consider and just think, well, too dark, I can't do that.
Well, exactly. And they were, I think, much more adaptable than we are, because they didn't have any choice. And electrical light has really changed the physiology of how our eyes work. And so that point in bringing people into Kenmore and literally turning off the modern lights and letting your eyes adjust and see what can you see in this room without the lights on. And you do, after a few minutes, you start to realize, you know, pattern and texture and reflection, all of those things actually help your visual acuity. And that's something that was very important to them in the period.
Maybe we do a video on fifth, and call it fifth night.
Fifth night. We can do a video on the fifth. Call it fifth night.
It just becomes a whole new, and we'll have our own button and everything.
Yes, we'll do our own button. It'll be great. It'll be confusing, but it'll be great.
It won't be historically, it will be wrong in some areas, right in some areas. Kenmore.org for more information. Again, November 5th, the night in Washington's Day. And again, USO night at Kenmore is November the 11th. One more event. You've done some of these Learn With Me days.
Mm-hmm. It's basically our like summer into fall event for families. We take our popular K-12 programs and we adapt them into one-hour blocks. And so this is the last one for the season. I think this is our most popular one. It's the I Dig George one, so it's all about archaeology at Ferry Farm. And if you or your child or your niece or your nephew or your family, friends, children are interested in learning about history and archaeology, I implore you to sign you and that child up for a session of Learn With Me Day I Dig George on October 29th. There are four different hour blocks, and it starts at 9:30, and the last one is at 2:30. And you can learn more at kenmore.org, but it's really fun. You get to dig in the dirt. You get to take a house tour that's focused on the archaeological findings at Ferry Farm. You get to sift the dirt. You get to learn about the washing and the mending process, and it's all encapsulated in 1 hour, and it'll be really fun.
Is an archaeologist that we know involved in this?
Not at the moment, but I'm sure we could lobby him right now at this very moment to make an appearance. But it is this Saturday, so I don't want to hold him to that.
You know, I don't like to get my hands dirty.
Right, of course.
It's icky.
Of course you don't. Dave Maracchi is here, who is an archaeologist. The last time you were here, you were telling us you had made some finds and were... Give us an update. There's going to be some more buildings.
Right, so... So there's two things going on in the world of archaeology. One is not really archaeology related. It's based on archaeology, and that's the reconstruction of support buildings or outbuildings that would have been used to support the activities in the house. And so in this case, we're recreating a storage building, which is the refrigerator for the kitchen, and then a slave quarter, which is a special space designated for probably an enslaved family to live in. And it's probably most enslaved people don't get to live in their own little house. They get to live in either the building they work in or like the kitchen, the cook would sleep in the kitchen.
Okay.
The assistant cook would sleep in their workspace. And so that's how it normally works. This is a special little space for an enslaved family that has some sort of special status on the Washington farm. And it could be like the person that does the wigs and maintains the wigs. And so this is a little benefit. They get to live in this little special space. And so the reconstruction of that is starting. The foundations are in place. And if it ever stops raining, the stonemasons will arrive and put the foundation for this building in. And it will take them about 2 weeks to do. And then when both foundations will be in, and then the carpenters will arrive next.
Oh, okay. Well, you had mentioned that this might be the end of the month, and it started raining. So that makes sense that this has been kind of pushed back.
Yes, it has started raining.
And then hopefully it has stopped raining.
Someday.
that the rumor is it is. But that's going to be interesting though on the site now to have this is you've talked about this for years that of starting to tell the story and kind of fill things in.
Without a doubt. And so while the construction's going on, so the activities at the site will change, and so there'll be sort of people doing 18th century crafts sort of on the site, sort of construction crafts. And so there'll be, in one case, the building is a log building, and so the logs will be set in place, and then somebody will come in and fill in the spaces between the log with a special material that a mixture of clay and other things. Mm-hmm. And so then the roofer's going to come in, and then there'll be a tar, and then furniture goes on the inside, a little bit of furniture, and then that's built into the structure. And then lastly, Megan comes in and and puts in furnishings, things that you would normally find in these two buildings.
So I'm guessing that these buildings, Megan, are going to be kind of like, they'll be treated like the houses at Ferry Farm, where you can go in and you can touch things and...
To a certain extent, one of them, yes. The enslaved quarter will be a building that you can go in and interact with. Very, very differently furnished, obviously, than the main house. We're really looking to illustrate the reality of what life in that mm-hmm. kind of building would look like.
Yeah.
The other building, the storage building, or the root cellar, as we've been calling it, because the floor in it lifts up. To reveal a subterranean storage pit where they would have kept preserved, essentially, canned goods, what we would call them today. And because that does not leave a lot of space for, you know, people to stand.
Right.
That's going to be more of a building that you look into.
Yeah.
But it will be fully furnished as a building housing preserved foods, dried meats, dried herbs, canned goods, that sort of thing. And so it's a small building, and you'll sort of understand the amount of preparation and food and work that went into supplying a family and an entire plantation of people through, you know, a winter season. It's really sort of mind-boggling when you look at the size of the small building and the amount they crammed into it. That's sort of the presentation that you'll get there.
This is going to be so interesting, Dave, because you've been talking about this for a long time, and it's always, I'm not a visual person, but as you have for years have described all of these buildings that you've been finding and what it looked like, this continues to tell the story of what went on there.
So European travelers, when they arrive in America, every time they come to one of these plantations, they comment that they look like small villages. There's so many little support buildings. There's so much work to keep this thing afloat. And so and then they're spread far apart because there's a lot of land surrounding them. And so you would go from they start to look like little villages on the landscape.
Wow. So this construction starting these are going to be functional buildings
soon.
At least by next year.
Yes.
So interesting. George Washington Foundation, Historic Kenmore and Ferry Farm, our focus this morning. Dave Maraca, Megan Budinger, and Amy Durbin here this morning. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, visit tourstaffordva.com. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit GoEVMobility.com. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
We are talking George Washington Foundation this morning, Historic Kenmore and Ferry Farm. Our focus, Megan Budinger, Amy Durbin, and Dave Maraca here this morning. Before we get out of here, one of the things with all that you have done with these programs, and especially the USO night at Kenmore, Amy, I know you have sponsors and people that are helping you do this.
Yes.
Or you don't.
No, we do. right now... Lewis Insurance and Hirschler are our sponsors for USO Night, and we are very grateful to them for this event.
Again, USO Night is at Kenmore, It is November the 11th. Go to kenmore.org.
Veterans Day.
Veterans Day, yeah. And there will be music, Fredericksburg Big Band, and cars. And are you going to be dressed in
wearing a 1940s-esque dress, yes.
Okay.
But mine has pockets, which I'm very excited about.
Okay.
There's going to be a really cool photo booth. There's going to be, like I said, Megan's working to get some exhibit panels back from a previous exhibit about USO in Fredericksburg. It'll be just a really great event that is, you know, this is the year for it. It's not an annual event. And so this is going to be like the one really big USO event at Kenmore, and it would be a great day for it or evening for it. We've gotten the Ted Schubel weather approval. And like it's perfect.
I'm 4 for 4.
Yeah,
you really
he promises it's going to be great weather.
So Dave didn't get the weather approval for the construction. That was the
no. That was yeah. Had you come yeah, to me, we could have.
Yeah,
I would have made sure that Ian stayed away.
But it works out perfectly to have it on Veterans Day.
Yeah,
you know, that Friday night. Like I mentioned, veterans do get a discount on tickets, and active military are included in that discount. But it should just be. We're really looking forward to a really fun night.
And I have the button. It's going to be just I'll use the button as far as the podcast of this show.
Wonderful.
to show it. And it is I have all 4 buttons, and I'm going to display them somewhere somehow proudly.
Well, but it's shadow box mounted.
Yeah,
on the wall.
So I know.
Yeah.
I've thought about that. But it's been a great year, as we talked about, just to be able to tell the story, the 100 years of Kenmore. Or the saving of Kenmore and the stories, and it's been you really have been able to educate all of us. You've certainly educated me.
Well, thanks. We hope so.
And you still—it's
been a fun year.
The in the exhibit over at Kenmore about the saving of Kenmore, is that just up through the end of the year?
That is up through the end of the year. So if you come for our holiday events, if you come for 12th Night in January, it'll still be up then. But that will be the end of the year. Will be your last chance to see it.
Okay, it's great. It's a great exhibit. It really is. It tells a great story. We will do another show to talk about it, but it's not too soon to start thinking about gingerbread.
Yes.
And gingerbread house classes.
Yep.
And dollhouses.
Wee Christmas is a great thing, and we will do that another time. But that is right around the corner.
It's not too far away.
Yeah. If possible, I want people to know the theme of gingerbread. If you haven't already heard this year, it is architectural wonders of the world. So start your planning and design process now.
Since I saw it built, could the house at Ferry Farm be included in that as an architectural wonder?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dave says yes.
Yeah. I saw it go up and did many a video with Dave, so.
I mean, at first I was like, let's do the 7 wonders of the world. And then I thought, no, let's focus on the architectural wonders of the world, which includes Kenmore and Ferry Farm. So if anybody wants to make a Ferry Farm gingerbread house, like we are here for it.
Absolutely.
Kenmore.org, the website. Again, the USO night at Kenmore is November 11th. Town Talk powered by Stafford Tourism. For information on events and activities, tourstaffordva.com. Thanks for listening. Amy Durbin, Dave Morocco,
thanks
Megan Bottinger. Thank you.
Talk
see you soon.
News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving for daily life. Travel, or just having fun, visit GoEVMobility.com. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear Town Talk anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFBA.